Go and hear first from Mr. Glazer.
May it please the court, I am Kenneth Glazer. I am the counsel for the trademark owner, Your Honor. The basis of our appeal are the errors of law that were made by the district court, one of which was the allocation of the burden. I'd like to come back to that because the burden of proof allocation, improper burden of proof allocation, should result in a reversal and remanding for new trial. However, there are several other court errors that the district court made that we respectfully state should result in a reversing and rendering of this for the trademark owner. I think there's no doubt to start off with, there's no arguments between counsel about the law. The trilogy of cases of the Supreme Court, of the Inwood Laboratories, Qualitex, and the traffic case, establishes that there are basically two tests for de jure functionality. The first test that was referred to as the traditional test requires that the particular feature that is being investigated must be essential to the use or purpose of the device or product to which it is attached. It also must not positively or negatively affect the cost by making the cost go down, or the cost, or the impair the quality by improving the quality. So, with that in mind, along came, of course, the second of that the trilogy, which is the traffics case, and gave us insight as to what is meant by the test of that is must be essential, and that is they defined it as that the feature that you're looking at must be the device must cause and be the reason that the device works. If it turns out that the feature is the reason that the device works, then that is de jure functional. Under the traditional test.
Would you agree, sir? Would you agree that the color yellow in your product offers utilitarian benefit for construction sites?
Yes, Your Honor. We will, for the purpose of the argument, and for we admit that it does provide a utilitarian benefit. What we are saying, though, by the case law, is that it doesn't provide, in the case of the traditional test, it's not the reason why the product it works. It's not the reason why it doesn't stop the leakage of water. It doesn't stop the leakage of gases. It's not the reason why. And in fact, Your Honor, if I may, the district court's findings of fact are actually our best friends in that regard, because before you, I think you have a copy of this, the first finding of fact on pages 10 or 11, the first page of the three page that was furnished to Your Honors, the court found, the district court, is that the addition of color is not necessary to prevent the migration of vapor, gas, or moisture from the earth. As a consequence, the court goes on further in there to point out that the bright light color is not even a prerequisite to the detection of a vapor barrier's damaged area. So what we have is, we admit, it provides a function. All of the colors provide a function. The light colors provide a function under the utilitarian test of the Fifth Circuit, in that they certainly the light colors will be contrasting with the dark soils. The dark colors will contrast with the light soils. But
your advertising campaigns emphasize the value of that yellow color, didn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, and we stand here and say proudly that the yellow, that everything that is in that advertising campaign is accurate, but does not make the color yellow de jure functional under the Supreme Court tests and the tests that have been adopted by Eppendorf, by the Fifth Circuit itself. Now, the district court admitted
doesn't the two qualities that you emphasize in your advertising, isn't that what makes the product appeal to consumers and makes it successful, makes it work?
No, Your Honor, what makes the product work is
sealing the moisture, but it makes it work insofar as facilitating the spotting of tears and reducing the heat on the job.
Your Honor, and yes.
That's what you emphasized in
yellow,
your advertising.
It's an incidental function. Yes, it is, Your Honor. Yellow, like other colors, will facilitate the spotting of tears. But that's not making the device work. And even the district court in its findings said that, okay, it's not the reason why the device works.
Well, isn't the real test that makes it work better?
No, Your Honor, it's not to make it work better, because anything could make it work better. We wouldn't have any secondary test that allows you to, which is the Fifth Circuit utilitarian tests, which is the competitive necessity test. You wouldn't have that, because every feature, everything can have some aspect to make something work better. But if it doesn't make the cause, the is not the reason why the product is there, it's not the reason why the device and is there, then it doesn't fall within the Supreme Court and the Fifth Circuit's requirement of the reason why the device works. It has to be essential to that, not that it makes it better, not that it helps. It doesn't say that. If it said that, and this is where the district court strayed, after admitting that it didn't make the device work, and admitting that it actually hurt, the second finding of fact, second sheet, which is the finding of fact on page 9, is that yellow increases the cost, and it also dilutes the quality of the product. The court found that. That takes it out of the traditional test. But the court didn't find it came out of the traditional test. What did it do? It said, okay, well, that's only a formal test. I'm not exactly sure what the court meant by that. What the district court then went on to say is, well, if it serves any significant function, it then fits within the traditional. And where did it get that? It got that by looking at isolated language in it took the statement in In Re Owens that a feature like pink color of insulation that performs no non-trademark function is not de jure functional. And it turned that around and said, well, that must mean that if it provides any function, then it's de jure functional. And that's illogical. That's an illogical conclusion. And it did the same thing. The court did the same thing. It went to another statement on pages 24 and 25 and said, an isolated statement in Qualitech text that says, when the color does not provide any function whatsoever, that clearly makes it not de jure functional. They said, oh, that means that the test means that if it performs any function, then it's de jure functional. And that's illogical. Those statements don't say that. And that's contrary to what the Supreme Court said. It has to be the reason why be the reason why this particular product, which is designed for the purpose of preventing moisture from going from leaking through from the ground, that's the function. That's what makes it. And anything that would impair that or affect that, I admit, would be what makes the device work. One other thing that the court, district court did that we find to be error. It tried to go back to Eppendorf, Eppendorf, which affirms the traffic's definition of it must be the reason why the device works. It went back to Eppendorf, and it took Eppendorf was examining, as your honors know, was honoring a number of features about this product, one of which was it was a pipette, and the pipette had black lettering in it, and it had clear plastic, and the court said, well, one could conjure up the possibility that a fluid might not be clear, and if it's not clear, then that would be an example of something that's functional under traditional. Where did the court get that? It didn't get it. First of all, it didn't get it from the case law, from the case itself. It didn't get it from the record. And we find that conjecture on its part, in order to try to cram it into up into Eppendorf was error on its part.
But you agree that the color yellow makes your product work better.
The color yellow, under certain circumstances where you have dark soil and you don't have sand, color yellow like bright orange, just like bright orange and bright yellow, makes it work better. And Your Honor,
How much of the time does it have to work better?
Pardon?
How much of the time, or under how many different circumstances, does it have to work better in order to meet the functionality test?
None, Your Honor. This work better is not the standard. And if something works better, that doesn't fit into the long line of case law that this circuit has for that allows you and demands you to look and see whether the orange works just as well. Is there anything different between bright orange and bright yellow? Bright yellow. The answer is no. Is there anything better between dark yellow and dark orange? The answer is no. Under the theory that if something has a function, like it makes it, as you said, work better because under certain circumstances it provides a contrast, that means that all colors would be de jure functional. And Qualitex says you can't, that's not the standard. Qualitex had that exact same situation. If you think about Qualitex, this is a Qualitex case. In the Qualitex case, the lower court found that color provided an advantage. It provided an advantage in that colors reduced stain. It reduced the possibility of seeing stain, and so it had a function. the lower court went ahead and said, well, because it does that, and because, therefore, the colors, all colors, are therefore de jure functional. It went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court says that's not the case. Just because it provides a function doesn't mean that it provides the function of making, being the reason why the product works.
All right. You have a red light, sir.
Yes, I see here. Didn't get too far.
Okay, Ms. Harris.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Erica Harris. I am counsel for Appellee PolyAmerica LP. I will briefly address some of the arguments made and then move on to the case law and other issues that are presented before this court. Judge Dennis, you are correct that if a product works better than under Qualitex, it is de jure functional. Stago misstated in its pretrial brief, and then here again today, the standard is not essential to the use of the product and affects cost or quality. The standard enunciated in Traffics by the U.S. Supreme Court and under the traditional test is essential to the use of the product or affects cost or quality. It is in the disjunctive, and the lower court found that it affected the quality. The color, as Stago concedes, makes the product work better. PolyAmerica would further contend that, Judge Dennis, you are right, that in fact the color yellow makes the product work because, as you noted and the lower court found, the benefit of visual contrast to make this product work cannot be understated. The whole point of this particular product is to create an impermeable barrier through which the vapor cannot flow. Stago just conceded moments ago that if the color affected the ability of the product to prevent the vapor from migrating, Stago itself would concede that it was essential to the way the product worked. In fact, that is what the lower court found and what the record establishes. Because of the visual contrast, pinholes, tears, and punctures can be found and repaired so that the vapor does not migrate. If you miss a pinhole, puncture, or tear, according to the unequivocal evidence in the lower court, the vapor migrates through, and you've spent a lot of money on a very fancy product that doesn't actually work.
Well, would bright orange work just as well?
Bright orange, that was a disputed question of fact in the lower court. According to the lower court's findings of fact, it's not clear that it would work just as well, but it is a color that in certain circumstances would offer visual contrast benefits.
I mean, what is it about yellow in particular that makes it any different than some other bright color?
I don't know that it is in different circumstances. I don't think that's the relevant test. The test of functionality is whether it makes something work or work better in circumstances that affect competition. The U.S. Supreme Court, all of its case law, and also this court in Eppendorf and Amazing Spaces, has focused on the effect on competition. So it doesn't matter, and in fact the U.S. Supreme Court said in Traffics Devices, you don't look at whether there are other alternatives that could do it just as well. You don't look at alternatives if under the traditional test the feature affects the cost or quality of the product. So it doesn't matter if orange could do it just as well in some circumstances or another color could do it just as well in some circumstances. The question is whether the functionality in some circumstances affects competition. In this case, the lower court found that it did. And I would note that in the briefing, Stago repeatedly stated that the lower court standard was if some isolated circumstances showed functionality, that's in quotes. That's incorrect. That's not what the lower court held. the lower court held that, quote, some circumstances, close quote, that affect competition would qualify for functionality. The court held that yellow, quote, serves a significant non-trademark function by enhancing visual contrast and attracting less heat in some circumstances, close quote, and was, quote, significant enough to invalidate Stego's trademark, close quote, and that was under both the traditional test and the competitive necessity test. No other court anywhere that either party has found has required functionality to appear on average, on more than average, or any sort of quantitative number of uses or circumstances. Instead, the focus has always been, because of the U.S. Supreme Court precedents, I would argue, on the effect on competition, and thus the Federal Circuit in Value Engineering held that even one circumstance, if it's one application, but that's 90% of the market, that affects competition. If it's 10% of the market, and to be clear, Federal Circuit didn't talk about the market shares, I'm just posing these hypotheticals. If an application only affected a small portion of the market, the relevant market, but it turns out that that's the most profitable segment of the market, then that could affect competition and therefore qualify as de jure functionality. I'd like to move on now to the other legal issue pending before this court, which is the burden of proof issue. First, Stego's argument that it wishes to make on its appeal has been waived. Stego's argument on this appeal is that regardless of where the substantive law places the burden of proof, merely because a party files a declaratory judgment action, that party, by virtue of filing the declaratory judgment action, immediately inherits the burden of proof. Doesn't matter what the substantive law says. That argument, which Stego makes in this appeal, was never made in the district court. The argument in the district court was that the substantive law, the Lanham Act, as interpreted by the U.S. Supreme Court and this court, put the burden of proof on PolyAmerica. Judge Fish correctly analyzed that law, which is complex. The Congress enacted the Lanham Act and has a burden shifting under the Lanham Act for trademark. It is different from patents. It is complex. This court has interpreted that Lanham Act in Amazing Spaces and said that Lanham Act creates a prima facie evidence of validity of a trademark when the trademark is registered, as it was in this case. Therefore, in this case, the burden was on PolyAmerica to produce evidence. That's what this court said in Amazing Spaces. It's a burden of production that, once met, shifts the burden of persuasion, that is the ultimate burden of proof, back to the trademark holder to prove non-functionality. And that's what happened in this case, and Stego does not appeal from those findings. Stego does not contend that Judge Fish got it wrong when it found that PolyAmerica had met its burden of production. Stego's argument in this appeal is new. It is that regardless of what the substantive law says, the declaratory judgment nature of this action immediately shifts the burden of proof. Stego's contention is that because it argued it should not have the burden of proof in the lower court, that general argument is sufficient to preserve all the specific bases for that general argument. That's not the law. This court in Maverick Recording versus Harper held that the appellant had waived her argument because she, quote, did not cite any provision of the Constitution or explain why the punishment was so unreasonable that it violated due process, close quote. That holding makes clear that it's not enough to make a general argument, that is, that something's unconstitutional because it's unfair and unreasonable punishment, but that instead a litigant must express a specific argument, that is, why it was so unreasonable so as to constitute unconstitutional punishment. That standard makes sense because the whole discussion in the waiver case law enunciated by this court is on whether the district court was given the opportunity to rule. And so if you don't make the specific argument, the district court doesn't have the opportunity to rule. Now, Stego says, well, in two sentences in the post-trial brief, we had the phrasing as declaratory judgment plaintiff, PolyAmerica bears the burden of proof. And we cited to a lower court unpublished opinion called Erickson, in which the court has some language that it quoted that the declaratory judgment plaintiff in a patent infringement case bore the burden of proving invalidity of the patent. That is not enough to preserve the argument it wishes to make. In Butler Aviation, this court held that a petitioner had waived an argument contained in a case cited in the court below because the argument, quote, was not even identified by name, much less advocated, close quote. That's what we've got here. First off, the unpublished opinion Erickson doesn't even really support Stago's argument because in Erickson, the burden of proof was placed on the party that would have the burden of proof under the substantive law. In the patent context, unlike the trademark context, the burden of proving invalidity is on the accused infringer. Why? Because that's what the Patent Act says. The Patent Act, Section 282, says patents are presumed valid, and therefore, when the courts interpret these issues, they say the accused infringer bears the burden of proof. In trademark law, it is different. Under the Lanham Act, the trademark holder and the U.S. Supreme Court jurisprudence, the trademark holder bears the burden of proving that the trademark is valid, including that it is non-functional. Now, even if this court chooses to nonetheless decide the burden of proof issue, despite the waiver of the argument, this court should still affirm the lower court's judgment on that issue. In the case of Ideal Mutual Insurance Company versus Last Days Evangelical Association, Fifth Circuit, 1986. Ideal Mutual Insurance Company versus Last Days Evangelical Association. And to be fair, this case was not referenced in the brief, so the citation is 783 F. 2nd, 1234. This court considered an insured's declaratory judgment action against an insurer. And this court held that, quote, the question of burden of proof is a matter of substantive law, close quote. In light of that binding presidential ruling, Judge Fish correctly analyzed the burden of proof and decided that after PolyAmerica met its burden of production, Stago bore the ultimate burden of persuasion and proof on the non-functionality issue. Stago does not appeal from that judgment. As I've mentioned, Stago's contention is different. It's irregardless of what the substantive law says, the procedural posture should shift the burden over to the declaratory judgment plaintiff. The Second Circuit, the Federal Circuit, and the Tenth Circuit all have clearly held that that is not correct. It does not. Each of those courts holds that the burden of proof rests on the party who would bear the burden if the action were brought in due course as a claim for non-declaratory relief. As noted in the briefing to this court, the Fourth Circuit holds that whether the burden of proof shifts as a result of the procedural posture should be decided case by case, and Judge Posner, more recently for the Seventh Circuit, said that's the most sensible approach. This court has not addressed the issue. In the unpublished and non-precedential case of In re Rawlings, in footnote 4, this court said the burden of proof is not, quote, the burden of proof is not controlled by the position of the parties on the docket as plaintiff or defendant in the declaratory judgment action, close quote. To be clear, however, in the text of the case, this court, in that unpublished opinion, seized on procedural considerations, namely that the party filed suit and made the claim in the bankruptcy court to place the burden on the plaintiff. Now, it was the bankruptcy context, and they cited a lot of bankruptcy cases, and it's not clear to me from the court's opinion whether that is consistent with where the substantive law would have placed the burden of proof or inconsistent. Similarly, in the lower court cases cited by Stago other than Erickson in this appeal, that's the two Louisiana district cases, Rowan and Government Employees Insurance, The decision to place the burden of proof on the declaratory judgment plaintiff was expressly made on the basis of procedural considerations. Both cases state, quote, there is sound reason for placing the procedural burden of proof on the declaratory judgment plaintiff, close quote. Now, those cases seem to be at odds with this court's ruling in Ideal Mutual that the question of the burden of proof is a matter of substantive, not procedural law. But even if this court were to now say that the burden of proof, although a matter of substantive law, can nonetheless be switched over by the procedural posture of the case, despite what this court said in footnote 4 in In re Rawlings, this court should not affect such procedural shifting of the burden of proof in trademark validity cases such as this. That's because the public policy enunciated by the United States Supreme Court favors making a trademark holder prove non-functionality, even in a declaratory judgment action. In Walmart Stores versus Samara Brothers, the U.S. Supreme Court held that, quote, competition is deterred, however, not merely by successful suit, but by the plausible threat of successful suit, close quote. That was a trademark case. As Judge Fish held after citing that case, placing the burden of proof on a party that believes a trademark is invalid but has been threatened with litigation will suppress competition because it will make it that much more plausible that an owner of an invalid functional trademark might nonetheless prevail in litigation. This court has repeatedly recognized the United States Supreme Court's decision to limit trademarks in order to preserve competition. In Eppendorf, this court recognized that the requirement of non-functionality prevents trademark law, which seeks to promote competition by protecting a firm's reputation, from instead inhibiting legitimate competition by allowing a producer to control a useful feature. For the reasons expressed by Judge Fish and the U.S. Supreme Court in Walmart versus Samara, placing the burden of proof of proving non-functionality on a competitor threatened with trademark infringement would inhibit, not promote, competition. Finally, on this issue, even if this court decides that PolyAmerica should have borne the ultimate burden of proof, the error is harmless and judgment should be rendered. The lower court found that, quote, the evidence presented at trial unequivocally shows that the color yellow as applied to vapor barrier offers utilitarian benefits for construction sites with torrid temperatures and or dark colored soils, close quote. That finding was not challenged on appeal. So even if this court chooses to enunciate a new legal standard on the burden of proof issue, this court should affirm the judgment of the lower court. In my last few minutes, I will briefly address Stego's argument regarding the Lanham Act. Stego contends in its reply brief that it can sue PolyAmerica or any competitor for using yellow on plastic sheeting under the Lanham Act, despite the holding of the lower court enjoining litigation, because the words, quote, Lanham Act, close quote, do not appear in the final judgment. Stego is mistaken. The Lanham Act does not provide protection for a functional mark. The memorandum of opinion from the lower court and the final judgment entered below holds that the trademark, quote, reflected in the trademark registered number at issue in this case is functional. Thus, the final judgment holds that the color yellow on plastic sheeting used as vapor barrier or vapor retarder in the construction industry is functional.
Was the Lanham Act argument made in the district court?
Yes, the Lanham Act was argued extensively and is discussed extensively in the memorandum of opinion. The words Lanham Act do not appear in the final judgment. So in conclusion, Your Honor, given the number of cases that hold that colors that offer utilitarian benefits in some circumstances constitute de jure functionality, such as the very close case of Bauman Tile, where yellow plastic tubing was held to be de jure functional, even though there was no evidence of whether it was more often used against dark soils rather than light ones, or more often used in hot weather than cold weather, And similarly, with this court's decision in Eppendorth, where there was no evidence, no discussion in the court about how often the black lettering on clear plastic would have visual benefits, and one can certainly imagine a case where it does not. This court should affirm all of the lower court's findings and judgment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Back to you, Mr. Glater.
Your Honor, let me just briefly talk about this function. This court has really gone farther than the district court has. The product here is a vapor barrier. A vapor barrier's purpose is to prevent migration of vapor gas or moisture from the earth to the concrete slab. District court found, as a matter of fact, and its findings of fact, that the addition of color has no effect whatsoever on that. Now, Your Honors have said, well, doesn't the color help in case there are some pinholes that would be there? And the district court has addressed that. It says, in its same findings of fact, this is not to say that a bright light color is a prerequisite to the detection of a vapor barrier's damaged area. It went on to talk about how that can be addressed by other factors. And so I would respectfully say that that finding that use of the color yellow falls within the dictates of the traditional test is error. And of course, once you get then to the competitive necessity test, there's a whole line of tests that Eppendorf says, hey, that's our utilitarian tests. And under those case law, that all of the cases then talk about comparing and aren't other colors wooden demand, aren't other colors just as well. And one more statement, let me just mention. In the district court's finding of fact, page 9, that's the last, that's page 3 of what we've presented to you. The basis, the sole basis for finding this to be de jure functional under is that yellow is a color. It says soil colors range from different colors, and yellow is a color. And therefore, the district court found that because yellow was a color, that makes it de jure functional, and that is not the law. Burden of proof. We've always argued burden of proof. This Stego has argued burden of proof throughout the district court. It cited the Erickson case in its to the judge. We're talking about a seasoned judge in Judge Fish who instinctively, seeing a plaintiff as the plaintiff, would instinctively know that that party would have the burden of proof. But what supports this even is this court's decisions or language in both the Amazing Space and the Igloos that points out the difference between burden of persuasion and burden of proof. This court has said, and I quote, the ultimate burden of persuasion remains at all times with the alleged infringer. In Igloo, the court said, the burden of persuasion remains with the claimant, with the party that has brought the claim. In this case, the plaintiff is Poly America, and they instituted this action. And so the burden of persuasion, of proving by a preponderance of evidence that Stego's yellow trademark is functional is their burden. Esteemed counsel has mentioned about the importance of making certain about about a competition, and well, this Fifth Circuit has also spent a lot of time urging the importance of trademark law and protecting. We're talking about a trademark here that was used exclusively for 18 years prior to the time that this plaintiff, this declaratory judgment plaintiff, entered the field. It was making barriers during that entire time. Did it not care whether it was too hot? Did it not care whether you can see whether or not the barrier was working or not? No, yellow didn't seem to make any difference to it until Stego achieved and Stego acquired secondary meaning in its
trade. You have red light, Mr. Clay.
Oh, I'm always like that.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. And if I may, one more sentence, Your Honor.
No, sir, that's it.
Okay.